Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. Musician Brett Denon has a message for the summer. See the world. That's the name of his new album and single, and at least to these ears, it comes at a fortuitous time.
Where you going, my brown-eyed son? You used to crawl, but now you run. You started off on a road half dark, and the river curled into a question mark. We sleep on diamond beaches, dear, and drink from prison streams so clear. You don't have to be rich to get around. There are mansions growing out of the ground. Go by, get out and see the world.
Outside of music, Denon is known for his climate activism, artwork, and love of the outdoors. This summer, he'll perform in our listening area on July 24th at City Winery Hudson Valley in Montgomery in Orange County, and July 25th at the Ridgefield Playhouse in Connecticut. In a recent conversation, we spoke about his music, his family, and his love of public radio.
Where I grew up, there was public radio. There's a couple of really great public radio stations, but they were mostly classical and bluegrass focused. We didn't have anything local, not until like after the 90s did the University of California Sacramento started to have a cool station. Before that, it was just the University of the Pacific, and they would all just play classical and bluegrass, but at night they would play the World Cafe. So that was how I kind of got my taste in music that wasn't the stuff that was fed to me on like the mainstream K-rock type radio. We had a classic rock, and we had country, and we had some just like today's rock hits. But that was cool because it was the 90s and it was a bunch of alt rock, but I didn't have anything really tasteful without the World Cafe. So I'm happy I got to do four or five of those performances.
What kind of music did you gravitate to during those years when you were growing up?
Well, when I was a kid, I listened to what my parents listened to, which was Paul Simon and Willie Nelson and James Taylor, that sort of stuff. And then as most kids do, most of my friends all fell in love with the Beatles when they really started listening to their own music. I don't know why. It's like the Beatles and the Beach Boys. I guess they're just so prevalent in history and in music history. So when I was a little kid, I was all into the Beatles. And then that naturally shifted into 90s alt rock and grunge, I think just because so many of those bands were influenced by the Beatles. I mean, back in the day when I was listening to Pearl Jam and Nirvana, and I used to think that they were so different, but now as an adult, and I listen to it and I'm like, oh, you know, they were all big fans of pop songwriting. That's why they were so successful, and that's why they made it on the radios, because they were hard and they were different, maybe different than Aerosmith, but they were still writing pop songs just like the Beatles did. So I got really into that, and I'm still really into that music. I mean, my taste as an adult has shifted more back to the singer-songwriters, and I'm still a huge Paul Simon fan and Cat Stevens and Van Morrison, but I still love Pearl Jam.
And if I'm not mistaken, your son is named Van for that reason, right?
His name is actually Cat Van Denen, like Cat Stevens, Van Morrison, Cat Van Denen. We call him Van just because, I don't know. I think before, when we found out he was going to be a boy, I was sticking to my guns on Van. I thought Van is a really cool name. It's so masculine and wild and studly, and maybe that's just what I think about when I think about Van Morrison. But then I thought, but Cat is a cool name for a boy too, and it's kind of feminine, so it's nice he has like two sides of the spectrum, and he can you know, his first name's Cat, but we'll call him Van. And if someday he wants to be called Cat, then that's cool too. But he likes being called Van for the most part for now.
How old is he now?
He's almost 3. He'll turn 3 in July.
How do you like being a father? I mean, how has it changed your life?
Well, it's made everything more complicated and meaningful and tiring. And it's made every little moment so much more precious. And it's forced me to live in the moment. And it's forced me to be present when I'm not. I used to get away with not being present and not being in the moment all the time, except for doing art and performing and playing, writing songs and performing on stage. I was always in the moment there, but now every little second I have to be in the moment. And it's changed me. It's changed me drastically. It's given me a lot more knowledge about life and a lot more knowledge about my father and my parents, just the deep feelings that I have for my son. And I can only imagine what my father had and has for me now. I feel like I'm a parent to every child that's out there. And I'm just every day I'm humbled by something. It's a reevaluation, a constant reevaluation of who I am and what life is.
Is your son musical at all? You know, you were into art, I know, early in your life as well, which was a passion of your mom's. Are you seeing any of those signs, you know, in the next generation?
Yes, absolutely. He's loves to paint and he loves music. He's got a drum set that he plays and he's always singing and he loves to dance. I mean, dancing is his main thing. Any kind of music is on, whether it's on the radio or coming through at the gas station when we're pumping gas. He's always dancing and jumping around and singing. And but he's also a kid, a little kid, and little kids are into everything. So who knows what'll happen? I'm certainly not pushing anything on him. I just leave the paints out and leave the instruments around. So if he ever wants to pick them up, he can, and it's easy. It's not out of his reach at any moment. It's like I want him to know that he can just feel comfortable being creative whenever he wants, and that it's easy to pick up a crayon or a pencil or a ukulele or something, and he can, whenever he wants, he can be creative, and that can be his identity. He's opening the door right now. I'm doing an interview.
No.
He's talking like crazy now, and he's saying, like, if he hands you something, I'll say thank you. Say anytime, Daddy. Oh, here he comes back with the juice. Oh, and you put it in a bottle? Wow, that looks like it has beets in it. Thank you. Okay.
Will he be able to come with you on the road this summer?
Yes, for some of it. Since we got the green light that things were opening up and touring, I was lucky enough to throw a lot of summer shows together in a matter of a couple of weeks, just because I have a history in a lot of these places working with these venues and promoters. And so we were able to piece together a tour really fast, but it's a little sporadic. It's a few shows in this region and fly to this region, a few shows there. And that's not the most ideal with bringing him around. It's better to bring him around for if I'm on a bus and there's a little bit more steady traveling from day to day. But I think they'll come out for a stretch that we're going to do from Long Island up into Connecticut. I think they'll come out for 4 or 5 days for that.
Does he have a sense that, you know, you kind of do this as your job, that, you know, there's a version of you that's on stage and recording, and then there's a different version who's home with him? Is he old enough to sort of see that distinction?
I don't think so. I think it's all the same thing. He hasn't seen me perform in a while, though, because of COVID. But early on, he saw me up on stage a bunch, but I think he was too young to really understand what was happening. He knows my voice really well. if he ever, he doesn't have all my songs memorized, but if he hears one of my songs on a radio or on a stereo or in the car, he immediately knows it's me. So he knows that I make music, but I'm not sure if he knows that everybody does that. His idol right now is this guy named Blippi. Have you heard of Blippi?
I just learned about Blippi last week. I had a couple of kids over and they, I'm thinking of Bluey, not Blippi.
Oh, I haven't heard of Bluey. Well, Blippi is this kid, this guy that makes these kids shows, and they're mostly about just playing and having fun. And he does a lot with dump trucks and excavators, but he has people write songs for him and record them. So there's always music and there's always dancing. And so he knows that I make music and he knows that Blippi makes music. So I'm pretty sure he assumes that that's just something everyone can do, which he's right. I mean, everyone can. I believe that everybody can write a song. I believe that everyone has a song within them. It's just, do they ever go down that road and write it? Do they ever sit with an instrument long enough? Do they ever sit alone with their voice long enough and try to figure out what that song is? But I think I just believe, like, we all have a heartbeat. We all move at a certain pace. We all have a rhythm. We all have something inside that we want to say. We all have something we need to share with the world. But I think also we have something that we want to put into words. And there's definitely a song in all of us. And that's why I think that people's debut albums, bands' debut albums, or when people are first starting to come into themselves as writers and artists, I believe that the reason that those albums are so good is because they're coming into their own and they're saying the thing that they were born to say, or they're finding that song or those few songs that were just innately within them that makes them so compelling.
In your own career and your own development, how did you make that leap that you're talking about, you know, from guitar lessons and obviously you have a lot of talent, to, you know, putting a stake in the ground and saying, you know, I'm going to do this as a songwriter and here's the song?
Well, I mean, you have to be, there's a little bit of being in the right place at the right time, like seeing an opening or seeing an opportunity and taking it. But you have to be at a place in your life where you can not only go for it and clear everything else away and really dedicate the time and make the sacrifices that it takes to do it, to get to a point where you're building a career, building a following, but also getting to the point where you're making something that people want to hear. And I think it really helps to be young, and it really helps to be somewhat ignorant or naive, because when looking back, I think, gosh, if, you know, I know now how hard it is to sustain a career. If I, you know, would I do it all over again knowing how hard it is? I'm not sure. Thank goodness I was ignorant enough to not know that it was going to be so hard. Thank goodness I was arrogant enough to think that, you know, why not me? I can do it. Thank goodness I was young enough to have nothing else really going on, or I had other things going on that were meaningful. But when the music bug caught me, and when I saw that people were reacting, it was not even there was no second thought. I was like, yeah, I'll just do this. I don't mind sleeping on floors. I don't mind living out of a car. Let's just go for it. And that's a harder thing to do when you're in a different phase in your life.
Your music and your disposition, you kind of are known for, you know, your sunny California approach to life. And do you retain that now that you've, as you say, you've been at it for quite a while and you've kind of seen what it's taken to make this career? Is that still the way you're wired?
Well, if you think I'm wired that way, that's great. That's the general perception of me. But we don't really, I mean, I can't compare myself really to others because I don't know what other people think about, but I am generally a positive person, and I do want to put nothing but positivity out there. I would, especially at this point in my life, like I want to be a force of good, but I don't consider myself as like just the kind of like a happy-go-lucky, positive guy all the time. I know I come across that way, and I know I am externally, and to a degree I am on the inside, but I would assume I'm just like everybody else in my own struggles and my own thoughts of like not being good enough or not being what I want to be or where I want to be or maybe going to dark places. I have all of that within me, but I've known, especially now, I've really come to realize that the people perceive me as this sort of optimistic, positive guy, which is really only part of my personality. But I've come to really love that, and I've come to really think that, yeah, I'm at a point now where it's really all I want to do. I want to write about the human experience, and I want to write music that makes people feel good and that has a good outlook and makes people feel good about being alive and makes people happy.
Both play stardust and love our saucer ice cream. I wish that it was me you were dancing with on the pool deck, the pool deck. I ain't your rockabye or indie diamond guy or the train act that makes you feel better about your own life. You're not bored with your proletariat who's sobered up so you could cry. Life's a bitch, but not.
Let me reintroduce you. We're speaking with Brett Denon. His new album is called See the World, and he'll be playing in our region on July 24th at City Winery Hudson Valley in Montgomery. That's in Orange County, New York. And July 25th at Ridgefield Playhouse in Connecticut. I have some questions about the album See the World, which sounds like a good advice coming out of this pandemic. Was this something that you were able to make, during this last year of lockdown and quarantine?
No, I've made some of it during quarantine, but I would say most of the recording was done about a week. I flew home about less than a week before we had our first shutdown in California. I recorded it in Nashville. I didn't finish it, but I flew home because it was clear that everything was going to start shutting down. I got home 6 days later, it shut down, and I just did nothing on the record for a long time, for many months. And then thought, well, I need to finish this thing. But the songs were written and the basic tracks were already laid down. It was just some work needed to be done on overdubs and some singing and some mixing and some mastering. And so I did that, but there was nothing opening up in the foreseeable future. So there wasn't really a lot of pressure on it. So it was a lot of doing nothing. And instead of working hard to and learning the songs and getting ready to go on tour, I just kind of sat there and checked on them every once in a while. And I watched and listened to how the songs changed and the meanings of the songs changed. Like See the World is a good example. It's the song about breaking out of your own comfort zone and going out and feeling, having your heart broken, getting lost and learning like the most valuable lessons of life. But now it's a song about, the most mundane everyday things that we take for granted that are outside of our house are the most beautiful and most important things, and don't take them for granted. And you need to get out and feel and touch and see the world again. And the world needs to open up, and we need to open up. The timing of the release of this album has changed the meaning for me a lot.
I have to imagine, given the delay in the production of the album that you just mentioned, it probably also gave you time to, you know, to think about how you felt about the songs. You know, you got back from recording and then you had this, you know, several months to reconsider or think about the music. And that would be pretty atypical, I think, for a batch of songs.
It is. And it's something that I'm really struggling with, because you write a song and you're in love with it, or you something about it that you really like, or there's something going on with it, or something going on with you that you just want to make a song be a certain way. And if you labor over it too long and change your mind too long, it loses its magic. So I like to write a song, record it, like make my own demo of it, and then never listen to it for months, or until I go into a studio with a band and then I start listening to it again and have some ideas and record it. I don't like to labor over it and change my mind. It just loses its shine when you do that. And so I love the idea of writing, recording, and releasing really fast. So it was really hard for me to just sit there and listen to the songs every week or every month or a couple, you know, here and there, and see if I still like them. And I do still like them, but I wanted this album to be out a year and a half ago. I wanted to be on to something else at this point, but it's okay. I think it's gonna change my process for the better in some way. I just don't know what way that is yet.
Did you miss performing on the road, or, you know, live performance? A lot of people thrive on getting up in front of people.
I don't thrive on getting up in front of people so much, because sometimes I do. When I'm in the moment and I'm really present, which usually happens once or twice a show in the night, and I feel like everybody's together on the same page, band, myself, and audience, then that's an amazing feeling. I thrive on that, but I don't necessarily thrive on the energy of the crowd or an applause. I thrive on just being with my friends and doing something that I'm good at and being in the moment and playing music. And throughout this whole quarantine, I haven't played music with any friends.
Is there a story behind the Paul Newman Daytona Rolex?
Yeah. I was on tour a couple of years ago watching Antiques Roadshow on PBS. I don't know where I was, but I know it was late at night, and I watched an episode of Antiques Roadshow, and I watch the show a lot. I'm not an antique hound, really. I like slow television. I like kind of slow TV with one camera angle. And there was my ears perked up because I heard the name Paul Newman, because I'm a huge Paul Newman fan. Probably my favorite movie star of all time. And it was this guy on the Antiques Roadshow. He was a pilot and a good looking older man. And he brought in a Rolex Daytona Paul Newman model, the watch that he bought in 1973, I think. He bought it because he was a pilot and it had all the dials that you could do ground speed. And it was, I guess it was a good watch for pilots. And he bought it for a few $100 in 1973. And then now it was appraised at $175,000. And the guy said, but this is just a base model or something like that. He's like, these things, the fancier they can get, they can be in the millions. I'd never been a watch fanatic or a jewelry person or an antiques person, but I just, for some reason, maybe it's because it was a Paul Newman model and I think he's the coolest of all time. I just thought that's a cool thing. That could be a cool song. And so I wrote it, and that's pretty much what the first verse is about. And then the second verse, I couldn't just bring myself to write a song just about a watch. I'm not that good of a writer. That, you know, Pablo Neruda, he has this ability to just write little poems about inanimate objects. but they're just so beautiful and they're so full of life. And that's what I was trying to do in the beginning, but it sounded like it was like a Paul Newman Kodachrome or Me and Julio kind of storyteller going down that road. So I had to jump ship in the second verse and say, am I really writing a song about a watch, or am I writing a song about what I think is valuable in the world, you know, that you can't put a price on? Because if I'm not going to sell this watch, it means too much for me, then what else like is meaningful and of value that you can't put a price on? And that's why I sing about world peace and feeding the hungry and saving the environment and bringing back the crystal rivers and the grizzly bears, or I say Mother Nature's creatures, but I'm thinking about grizzly bears and wolves when I sing that line.
I've never been accused of being fancy. I'm not stupid with my money, honey. I could be stupid for free. I took you to the antique road show. They told me it was worth a bolo, but I'm never gonna sell it. My granddaddy gave it to me.
Climate, the outdoors. I mean, these are passions of yours. Are you optimistic about where we are right now?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I am. I'm pretty optimistic. It seems like climate action is becoming really trendy. Like big industries are getting involved in big things. Seems like at least in the United States, our administration is pretty solid on maintaining protected public lands. Seems like more and more people are getting outside and enjoying the outdoors. I think things are going to get much worse. I think we're going to lose a lot more species, and we're just growing as a population. We're going to lose a lot more land, but I think that something is happening. I don't really know what it is, but I feel good about it.
Just to wrap up, I think I left this hanging earlier. You mentioned why your son is named Cat Van. I was curious, who are you named after, if anyone?
My dad says I was named after Bret Hart, a Gold Rush rider in California, but I don't think I was named after him. I think that he read something, or he saw the name, or he thought, oh, Brett would be a good name for a boy. I don't think he's a big Bret Hart fan. I just think he got the name from Bret Hart. I grew up in a place that's really close to California, Gold Rush Country, and there's a famous book that Bret Hart wrote that's about a place really close to where I grew up called The Outcasts of Poker Flat. And so whenever you go up into the Gold Country, you're always looking at signs and things that are about, oh, Bret Hart lived here. Mark Twain lived here for a while. Mark Twain wrote this when he lived here, you know. So it's everywhere where I grew up.
Brett Denon's new album is called See the World, and he'll be in our listening area for concerts July 24th at City Winery Hudson Valley in Montgomery, and the next day at Ridgefield Playhouse in Connecticut. Brett, congratulations on the new album. It's a great listen, and thank you so much for spending all of this time with us.
My pleasure. Thank you, Ian.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
You're still a child in your mother's eyes. You know you can be good again. You know there's still time in your mother's eyes. You're still a child.